Welcome to 30 Minutes of VOA Learning English, the voice of America's information service for people learning English. Join us now for our daily magazine show, As It Is, and other programs designed for English learners.
Hello, let's do it again. It's time to learn American English and hear about interesting things going on around the world. I'm Jim Tedder in Washington. Today, we will begin with a story from Pakistan. It involves the fight against polio. Then, for something completely different, we travel to China. It appears that economic and lifestyle changes are encouraging more Chinese to own and ride horses. What's the story? Stay with us. Details are about 5 minutes away. Now, here is part one. Pakistan has arrested hundreds of parents and ordered police to arrest hundreds more for failing to cooperate in efforts to stop polio. Officials acted because the parents refused to have their children vaccinated against the disease. They would not let healthcare workers give polio vaccine to the children. The Pakistani government action is part of new efforts to fight the disease. Pakistan is one of only three countries where poliovirus remains a problem. The parents were arrested during a polio vaccination campaign in the northwestern province of Khyber Pakhtunkhwa. Polio cases have been confirmed in the area. The detained parents were sent to jails for refusing the polio vaccine for their children. Officials say the detainees will be freed only after writing an apology and promising their children will get the vaccine. The three-day campaign aimed to vaccinate more than 2.7 million children across Khyber Pakhtunkhwa province. In 2014, Pakistan reported 306 new polio cases, its highest number in 14 years. This year, the country has recorded 13 polio cases, mostly in the northwest. The rise in cases last year led international donors to pressure the government to make sure immunization campaigns reach every child. Rotary International is among the donors helping Pakistan and other countries improve their anti-polio efforts. Aziz Memon is the group's national Polio Plus chair for Pakistan. He admits security concerns and political unrest have hurt the effort. He says the country can help remove polio as a health threat.
We are almost done. Pakistan is a tumbling block, and hopefully in a year you'll see that the plans we have, we will be able to give you some good news.
Mr. Memon and United Nations health officials are hopeful that Pakistan's new measures can help it defeat polio in the coming years. They point to the country's effective immunization campaigns in earlier years. Those efforts left officials to declare Pakistan nearly polio-free in 2012. Religious groups in rural Pakistan have long seen the anti-polio campaign as part of a Western plot to keep Muslims from reproducing. And Islamic militants suspect Western governments are using the campaign to gather intelligence. That suspicion results from reports 4 years ago that America's Central Intelligence Agency organized an effort to vaccinate Pakistanis against hepatitis. CIA agents were said to have used the immunization drive to find Al-Qaeda leader Osama bin Laden. The suspicion of CIA involvement has led to deadly attacks on anti-polio teams and bans on vaccination campaigns in tribal areas of Pakistan. The resulting violence led to the death of more than 70 people, including healthcare workers. Last Monday, security concerns forced health officials in Balochistan province to postpone a 10-day polio immunization campaign. Health workers also demonstrated in the Jobe area of Balochistan to protest the killings last month of 4 members of a polio team. The protesters demanded Pakistan's government bring those responsible to justice. You are listening to VOA, the Voice of America, and we are coming to you from Washington. Across Asia, the increase in sales of high-priced goods and services has been partly fueled by the rise of China's middle class. Among the activities enjoyed by some wealthy Chinese is the ownership of horses. The quality of life tied to horses and horse ownership has become a new sign of success among a small but growing number of people in China. Mario Ritter joins us with details.
Sports involving horses have not always been permitted in China. Former Chinese leader Mao Zedong banned horse racing in 1949. More than 60 years later, racetracks, polo fields, and jockey clubs are opening for business in Chinese cities. And there is a rising number of horses imported from overseas. Maiken Jeschke is with Equestrian Globe, a German company that imports horses into China. It also builds equestrian facilities and sells riding gear and equipment.
China has seen a huge increase in the equestrian world and the equestrian market in general, and the interest in horses and horse sports over the last 10 years and the last 5 years intensively.
China now has 25 horse racing tracks and 300 equestrian clubs. Land developers are building a $2 billion equestrian center in the city of Tianjin. It is called the Tianjin Equine Culture City. The developers have promised to build 4,000 stables to house horses. They have also said they will build a state-of-the-art medical center for the animals, 150 trainer offices, and training areas. The development also will include a race course, clubhouse, and an international equestrian college. Shen Ge lives in Beijing. He buys horses. His 15-year-old daughter, Shen Qing, is one of the youngest competitive riders in China. She competes internationally in show jumping. Shen Ge says there is a real interest in equestrian sports in China. But bad dealings between European horse sellers and Chinese buyers have damaged trust in the international market. He notes examples of Chinese buyers attempting to negotiate deals for horses and then canceling contracts at the last minute. He says some buyers even disappeared after a horse was sent to China and the seller had already spent thousands of dollars on shipping. Such stories do not concern American David Snodgrass. He brought the first American quarter horses to China. He says the Chinese market for quarter horses has increased in the past few years.
We work in saddlebreds and standardbred. With those breeds, we've seen steady growth over the last, I would say, the last 3 to 4 years.
Horse sellers say the market will only grow as interest in the sport increases. Shen Ge has built his career in business marketing. He says his love of horses keeps him in the stables during most of his free time. He has passed this interest to his daughter, Shen Qing. He says she represents the future of the Chinese equestrian market. This month, Ching will travel to Italy for yet another international jumping competition. I'm Mario Ritter.
And I'm Jim Tedder in Washington. You are listening to The Voice of America.
Coming up, more programs designed for English learners. You can read and listen to our reports and download MP3s at learningenglish.voanews.com. You can learn with us on Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube at VOA Learning English.
From VOA Learning English, this is the Economics Report. About 500 American companies operating in China say they are making a profit. But top-level officials with the companies say they increasingly feel unwelcome and targeted by the Chinese government. The American Chamber of Commerce in China released the results of a survey of its members earlier this week. 57% of top-level managers said they feel Chinese officials are concerned about investigating foreign companies. The survey said that 47% of the officials felt unwelcome doing business in the country. That was an increase from 44% in the group's report last year. However, most businesses asked, 70%, said they remain profitable or very profitable. James Zimmerman is chairman of the American Chamber of Commerce in China, also known as AmCham China.
People are making money, but there's always challenges. For the last 35 years, there's been challenges here. Anyone that says there was a time when there was no challenges, or there was that golden era, forgets that there's always been challenges here.
In China, the investigation of foreign companies has become common since President Xi Jinping took power. Under his leadership, China has launched a campaign to improve food safety and against official corruption. Chinese officials have examined the operations of Microsoft, Qualcomm, Audi, McDonald's, and other foreign companies. James Zimmerman says he does not believe the government is targeting such companies on purpose. AmCham China represents more than 1,000 U.S. businesses. Its representatives often meet with U.S. and Chinese officials. Mr. Zimmerman has been working on China-related trade issues for more than 20 years. He says that he was personally involved in developing China's anti-monopoly law. He says many of the cases against foreign companies were not raised first by the government. It can be difficult for private companies to operate in China's business environment. The companies have trouble competing against state-owned businesses. The country has experienced huge changes since it moved from a planned economy to one that is more market-driven. However, the state still has a strong influence in business. The study found that 83% of those who gave answers noted concerns about the effects of internet censorship on their businesses. Mr. Zimmerman says that companies are mainly concerned about how internet controls can affect the flow of information. Those are things that affect everyone, he says. He adds that internet censorship affects some businesses more than others. However, services industries that depend on information are among the hardest hit. And that's the Economics Report from VOA Learning English. I'm Mario Ritter.
Welcome to The Making of a Nation, American History in VOA Special English. 1892 was a presidential election year in the United States. In that year, most parts of the American economy were expanding, but one part was not doing well: agriculture. The result was the birth of a new political party. It was called the People's Party. Its members were called populists. This week in our series, Stan Busby and Morris Joyce tell about the populists and how they campaigned against the Republicans and Democrats in the election.
In the late 1880s, a North Carolina farming publication described America's economy this way: "There is something radically wrong in our industrial system. The railroads are making much money, yet agriculture is failing. The banks are doing great business, yet agriculture is failing. Towns and cities grow, yet agriculture is failing. Wages were never so high, yet agriculture is failing." Historians give four major reasons why agriculture was failing in the late 1880s. One was the high cost of transportation. Second was high taxes. Third was falling prices for agricultural products. And fourth was the high cost of borrowing money.
Farmers began to organize, to discuss their problems. They formed local groups called alliances. An alliance member described the result of these discussions: "People began to think who had never thought before. People talked who had never spoken much. Little by little, they began to study their condition. They discussed taxes on income, government ownership of property, the unity of labor, and a thousand other opposing ideas."
Local alliances formed larger groups. The larger groups included many persons who were not farmers, but who lived and worked in agricultural areas. These included teachers, doctors, repairmen, reporters, and church leaders. In 1889, the major alliances held separate conventions in St. Louis, Missouri. They refused to form one big alliance. They were divided on several important issues.
The chief issue was political. Leaders of the Northern Alliance had decided that agricultural interests could expect little help from either the Republican or Democratic parties. They believed the answer to their problems was a third national political party. Leaders of the Southern Alliance disagreed. They belonged to the Democratic Party. And at that time, Democrats faced little opposition in the South. A new party would weaken their political power. So they wanted to work for change within the existing Democratic Party.
Another issue dividing the Northern and Southern alliances was racial. How would a united alliance deal with black farmers? The Southern Alliance did not permit black members, and it did not want blacks in a united alliance. The Northern Alliance said blacks could join. The two groups could not settle their differences before the state and congressional elections of 1890. So they did not campaign as one party, but they campaigned for one idea: help for America's farmers. throughout the South and Middle West. They succeeded in electing agricultural candidates as governors, state legislators, senators, and members of the House of Representatives.
Farm leaders everywhere were surprised by their election victories in 1890. They had not expected to win so much so quickly. Leaders of the Northern Alliance decided the time was right to form one party to represent all farmers. They felt sure of success. For now, enough leaders of the Southern Alliance were willing to support the idea. These Southern leaders had succeeded within the Democratic Party, but they quickly learned that they held political power only at the local level. They held almost no power at the national level. So, a few months before the presidential election of 1892, America's agricultural alliances held a joint convention in Omaha, Nebraska. They formed a new party. They called it the People's Party. They called themselves populists.
Delegates to the convention approved a policy statement for the new party. The statement said the national government should own the country's railroads, telegraph, and telephone systems. It said the government, not banks, should supply paper money. And it said no limits should be put on government production of silver money. The populists called for a tax on earnings, fewer working hours for labor, controls on immigration. To help farmers, the populists demanded what they called the sub-treasury plan. Under this plan, farmers could put their crops in government storehouses. Then they could wait to sell the crops until prices rose. While they waited, they could borrow money from the government at low cost. They would pay back the loans when they sold their crops.
The new People's Party also proposed ways to make government more democratic. It said secret ballots should be used in all elections. It said senators should be elected by the people, not chosen by state legislatures. Most Americans considered populist proposals extreme. They felt the proposals were too close to socialism or communism. The populists considered their proposals just. They felt their movement was a struggle for more equal control of the nation. On one side of the struggle were producers. These included farmers, laborers, and small businessmen. They were led by the new People's Party. On the other side were what populists called non-producers. These included wealthy bankers and leaders of industry. They were led by the Republican and Democratic parties. Populists wanted producers to have some of the political power traditionally held by non-producers. They wanted producers to get a fairer share of the nation's increasing wealth.
The People's Party chose James Weaver as its candidate in the presidential election of 1892. Weaver had been an officer in the Union Army during America's Civil War. He had served in the House of Representatives, and he had been the candidate of a minor party in the presidential election of 1880. The Republican Party renominated President Benjamin Harrison, and the Democratic Party nominated former President Grover Cleveland.
The campaign began quietly, but a few months before the election, a labor dispute exploded into an important campaign issue. Several thousand steel workers went on strike at a factory owned by the Carnegie Steel Company in Homestead, Pennsylvania. The steel workers' union called the strike after failing to reach a wage agreement with company officials. After months of growing tension, the head of the company sent 300 private security officers to break up the strike and protect non-union workers. The security officers and many of the strikers carried guns. Shots were fired. 10 men were killed. The governor of Pennsylvania immediately sent state soldiers to the steel factory. After a few more attempts to continue the strike, the union admitted defeat. Its power was crushed. It would be more than 40 years before America's steelworkers were organized again.
A short time later, state soldiers were used to break up a strike by railroad workers in New York. And federal soldiers were used against striking silver miners in Idaho. This use of government troops to end strikes caused many citizens to vote against the ruling Republican Party. They voted for the opposition Democratic or People's Parties instead. In the election of 1892, Republican President Benjamin Harrison was defeated. Democrat Grover Cleveland, who had lost to Harrison 4 years earlier, would be president again. The People's Party candidate, James Weaver, won 1 million popular votes and 22 electoral votes.
Grover Cleveland returned to the White House just as his wife had said he would. But his second administration would be much more difficult than his first. Within 2 months of Cleveland's inauguration, the United States entered into one of the worst economic depressions in its history. That will be our story in the next program of The Making of a Nation.
Our program was written by Frank Beardsley. The narrators were Stan Busby and Morris Joyce. You can find our series online with transcripts, MP3s, podcasts, and images at voaspecialenglish.com. You can also follow us on Facebook and Twitter at VOA Learning English. Join us again next week for The Making of a Nation, an American history series in VOA Special English.